and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is Thursday, February 4th, 2016, and just watched the Democratic presidential debate. The intro music refers to the fact that it's just me. I'm flying solo. Rachel is sick, unfortunately. Dana's taking care of her. They're out in Lakewood, and I'm here in Aurora, all by my lonesome. And I guess it could also apply to the debate stage. No Martin O'Malley, who dropped out or, quote, suspended his campaign as if he might restart it at some point, which, of course, he will not, most likely. And so just Hillary, just Bernie duking it out in a debate that wasn't officially – I guess we didn't officially know it was going to happen until, like, yesterday. They talked about it last week. They kind of just want to add it at the last minute in coordination with MSNBC. They had to clear it through both the Clinton and the Sanders campaign, and the DNC just kind of went along with it, with my least favorite person in the Democratic Party, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, was playing the card tonight about how wonderful it was to have these more debates and everybody seeing them, when, of course, it was her that engineered having fewer debates and having them coincide with football games and on Saturday nights and all these other points in time where nobody would see them. But I can do a whole rant on her another time. We'll get to the debate. So I thought it was really good, really interesting, spirited debate. Actually, I'm sorry. Before we do that, let's back up a hot minute. You hopefully saw our live blog, our live video stream of the Iowa caucuses. We didn't do a follow-up episode to talk about them. Ted Cruz won, of course. On the other side, it was razor thin, and Hillary won barely, kind of. And there's a little bit of controversy. Well, there's controversy on the other side, too, that I'll get to in a second. But there's sort of controversy. Apparently, a lot of it was a big clusterfuck. The caucus sites were not properly staffed, and there were huge, long lines. And a lot of the people that got there later apparently weren't Bernie supporters, and some of them might have gone home and blah, blah, blah. And there were coin flips to decide county delegates, which, of course, the media mistakenly reported as deciding state delegates, which is a whole different deal and is being erroneously reported and going viral all over the internet, and people are confused. Of course, they're confused about how the caucus process works in the first place anyway. And the caucus, we went over all this ad nauseum. Go back to the last episode for the YouTube link, and you can see our live video stream blogs were archived, and you can watch them again. And we explain in very, very painful, laborious detail how the caucus process works in Iowa, both on the Democrat and the Republican side. The Republican side is much simpler. The Democrat side is a nightmare. And I don't know why they still do it this way, but they do. And in a year where the results may not have been that close, it probably would not have been a big deal, probably would not have been a lot of controversy following it. But when you have a razor-thin result like this, it's inevitable that all the problems or nuances or issues are going to come to the forefront, and there's people yelling about conspiracy theories and that the DNC of Iowa understaffed these polling precincts on purpose because they're in the bag for Hillary, and that is going to screw Bernie supporters, which seems like convoluted logic to me. But, you know, there's a lot of this going around. I wrote a blog or a diary on Daily Coast the other day that really needs to tone it down. The infighting is getting kind of vicious on our side, which is exactly what we don't need. I kind of know it's inevitable, and I'm shouting into a windstorm about it, but I'm still going to do it anyway because, you know, what we don't need is a big swath of voters either becoming depressed or staying home or not being on board if it's not their guy or gal in this. But I guess some of that's going to be inevitable, where we could sit back and be united while the other side is really going to be tearing themselves apart over the next few weeks and months. And I'm going to get to that. Trump, as we know, was leading in the polls by fairly substantial margins. I think the RCP average and the 538 average was like between 6 and 8 points at least that he was leading, with Cruz second, Rubio third. But Cruz ended up winning by about 6 to 8. and got more delegates, of course. And Rubio had a strong third, which is given him momentum. And he was very clever to time his, quote, scare quote, victory speech in coming in third. A long, ponderous, you know, but good speech that the networks all picked up. And it was very crafty on his part, because I think that, in part with the surprise third place finish and the fact that the media desperately, desperately wants him to be the new golden boy, is now giving him some momentum. We'll see if that carries on Tuesday for the New Hampshire primaries. But he's the talk of the town. And when Trump came in his surprising second to Cruz, who got strong support from the evangelicals, we didn't know at the time the full story of what was going on the ground on the Republican side. We found out later, of course, and so did he, because what we said, and you can see this if you go back and see our live stream telecast, is saying, or webcast rather, is saying, you know, how's Trump going to handle this? Is he going to be magnanimous and act like a real presidential politician and just congratulate Ted Cruz and move on and say, see you in New Hampshire? Or is he going to start yelling about conspiracy theories and lawsuits and fraud and throw a big hissy fit? Well, that night, he did the former. He had a very short speech. He said, congratulations, Ted. Bye, Mike Huckabee. He's a good guy because Huckabee dropped out. And I'll see you in New Hampshire. And we were kind of surprised. We said, oh, well, we weren't expecting that. But then after 24 hours to digest and I guess find out about some reports of some shenanigans going on the ground, he started saying exactly what we thought he might say that night. He's threatening to sue. He wants a recount. He's accusing the Cruz campaign of, quote, voter fraud, which voter fraud does not mean what he thinks it means. Of course, voter fraud does not mean what Republicans in general think it means. But he's screaming about dirty tricks and shenanigans, and Cruz campaign is horrible, and they did these horrible things. He's got a point about one thing. Ben Carson, the number one enigma in the last, I don't know how many years of presidential politics, decided while the caucuses were going on or after they just started to tweet that he was going home, and he was taking time off to do his laundry or something, and he wasn't going straight to New Hampshire. I forget exactly what he said, but he said something to the effect of, you know, I'm going home. And it was taken, I think, probably for good reason, is thinking maybe he's dropping out. The Cruz campaign and surrogates ran with this and said, wow, sounds like Carson's dropping out, guys. And this is while the caucuses are going on and people are there caucusing for Ben Carson. And later, he had his wife, Ben Carson's wife, who was at some caucus events, is now being asked, what does this mean? Is he dropping out? She said, no, he's not dropping out. You know, it's just Ben Carson being Ben Carson, who's from another planet. And only Ben Carson knows why Ben Carson does and says what Ben Carson does and says. I certainly don't. So the Cruz campaign is saying, even going as far as to tweet, I think Steve King sent out a bunch of tweets and said, oh, wow, sounds like Carson's dropping out, you know, and other might as well caucus for us. Worst, you know, caucus for Cruz if you were for Carson. And these some of these caucus site people for Cruz were saying this. They've stood up and said, hey, did you hear Carson's dropping out? Or it sounds like Carson's dropping out, or Carson's going home, or what have you. Well, Carson later had to send out a tweet or a press release or all of the above saying, no, I'm not dropping out. And I just meant I'm going home to do my laundry. Something absolutely ridiculous, but made it clear, like, no, I'm not dropping out of the race. I'm totally still in. Yes, caucus for me. It's as bewildering as to why he would have sent the first tweet out if he was hoping to win or get some delegates. I don't know. God only knows, again, what this man is thinking. That's lost in all the stories. Why in the world would Ben Carson say what he said in the middle of the caucuses to make it even sound like maybe he was dropping out? Because that's what I thought, possibly. You know, that's how people took it. That's certainly how the Cruz campaign took it. Now, when Carson eventually did have to issue a clarification saying, no, I'm not dropping out, the Cruz campaign and the, you know, his surrogates and the people at the caucus sites, they didn't stand up and say, oh, no, we just found out Carson isn't dropping out. They just rolled with what they said earlier. It's a dirty trick. It is a definite low-down, dirty campaign trick. There's no doubt about that. Is it, quote, illegal fraud of some kind? Not by any letter of the law, certainly, but it's a dirty trick. One that Ben Carson sent in, you know, got the wheels rolling on by inexplicably sending out that weird-ass tweet about going home while the caucuses were going on for some reason. I know Carson's pissed about it, too. You know, he's talking about dirty tricks, of course, with the Cruz campaign. And I'm not sure how much of an effect it really had, and we'll never really know, because Carson was polling like 10 to 12%, and he wound up with just under 10, about 9-something percent. So it's not like the way he finished was far off with how he was polling. He claims that his internal polling showed they expected to do much, much better, and he now blames the Cruz campaign. He doesn't blame himself for sending out that stupid-ass tweet, but he blames the Cruz campaign for, you know, essentially screwing up his numbers. And obviously the Trump campaign, or Trump himself at least, is going nuts and saying that he lost basically because of this. I'm sure if some of those people planning to caucus for Carson decided to turn around and caucus for Cruz, some of that probably fed into it, but that's not the whole story, I'm sure. For some reason, these super evangelicals in Iowa get undercounted in the polls, and poll caucusing is like impossible because, again, and I'm not going to go into the whole caucus thing again, but caucusing is not like a primary. You don't just show up and vote. A bunch of people show up and they make speeches and campaign on behalf of their candidate, and then in the case of the Democratic side, it becomes like Survivor, where if you don't get a certain threshold, you have to jump into somebody else's caucus pool or go home. On the Republican side, it's a little different, but it's weird. So a poll is probably not going to tell you how things are going to finish up, because weird things happen at each different caucus site. And so weird things did happen. And what you had was Ted Cruz winning, and Trump coming in second, and Rubio a very, very close third. The way that the campaigns and the media handled it, you would have think Rubio won the thing by 50 points, and, you know, and Cruz came in second and Trump came in third. Of course, that's not how it happened. But a lot of that is due to, in part of Trump's own, you know, bravado and just talking about, I win everything, I'm a winner, I'm a winner. And also the fact that he was leading in the polls. But again, trying to poll a caucus is I don't even know why they bother doing it, to be honest, because it's not like just showing up and casting a vote. Again, not going to talk about caucusing anymore. I'm going to be doing it myself coming up on here March 1st, as are Rachel and Dana, and we'll have lots on. We can't caucus at the same site, unfortunately, but we're going to give you a lot of more personal in-depth about the whole caucus process. And it's much different in Colorado probably than in Iowa, almost certainly. Whether it be better or worse, who knows. But so there's that. Moving on to the debate tonight. It was interesting. No O'Malley. They both came out swinging, especially Hillary. Hillary was obviously very, very well prepared, and she had some good zingers, and she landed a really good haymaker right off the bat and then turned around and screwed it up. And I'll explain. One of the first questions, I forget if it was Rachel Maddow or Chuck Todd, asked, well, you know, he says you're not a progressive. This is to Hillary Clinton. He says you're not a progressive. He says you call yourself a moderate and you're not really progressive. And she ran into a good rant about this dumb litmus test of what a progressive means. And she said, by this standard that you guys in the Sanders campaign is talking about, you know, President Obama is not a progressive and Ted Kennedy is not a progressive. And, you know, Maggie Sheehan in New Hampshire is not a progressive. And then you did these things that are certainly not progressive. So let's stop with the stupid labels and talk about what we're going to do in our policy. And it was a good rant, and it hit the mark. It got big applause, and I thought it was very effective. Then Bernie, you know, had a decent comeback, but I thought the punch was landed and great. But then she decided to keep going. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of if you get in a fight with your boyfriend or girlfriend and, you know, you've made a good point and your significant other has conceded, okay, you're right, I'm sorry. And then you just keep hammering away at it. It's like you don't know when to stop. You know, you just go in for the kill, even though you've won. And then you keep hammering, and then your significant other gets pissed off again, and then you wind up actually having to turn around and apologize yourself when you had just won the argument a second ago. And that's kind of what happened. Hillary, you know, she won, I thought, on that point. And then it's going back and forth. And again, she's still going on and on about it, about, you know, stop with this litmus test of calling who is a progressive and whatever. And then said, you know, this is the artful smear campaign that you're running. And that got some huge boos from the audience. And that's unfortunate, because now what the soundbite is going to be, instead of her landing what I thought was a good haymaker on, you know, the stupid progressive litmus test thing, the soundbite now is going to be her saying, accusing Bernie of smearing and then getting booed. And you know what it reminded me of? If you go back to 2008, I don't know if any of you guys probably don't remember this, but in 2008, there was a semi-24-hour controversy that Barack Obama was using a line from a speech or something that was half paraphrased from somebody else that was used before, and he kind of said it, but maybe he didn't say it clear enough, so there were some accusations of plagiarism. And Hillary was already starting to lose the primary battle, so she came up with this line in one of the debates. Say, you're plagiarizing because you use this line in your speech that's actually from somebody else, and that's not hope you can – or change you can believe in. That's change you can Xerox. And it just came across really ham-handed and stupid, and it got huge boos from the audience. And I forget where this debate was. I forget exactly when it was, but it was during the primary battle between Clinton and Obama. And I'm just thinking – boy, if you're a Hillary supporter or Hillary campaign person, that moment right there is like some sick deja vu. You know, not that it's going to have the same effect or mean the same thing, but you got to be a little more nimble and know, you know, when you've made your point and not to go too far. And on that, she went too far. But she recovered. And again, she made some very, very strong points. It was kind of more of the same that we were talking about. She said, you know, his proposals are too pie in the sky, and there's no way that you're going to be able to pay for free tuition for everybody. You know, this Medicare for all, it's going to put Obamacare in danger, which I think that's kind of a specious argument. And Bernie did have an appropriate comeback saying, look, just because I want this doesn't mean I'm going to like rip away Obamacare first and then send this whole thing into chaos. That's not what I'm going to do at all. That's not how it works, which he's absolutely right. I mean, there's nothing to suggest that is how it would happen. There's also nothing to suggest that there's a chance in hell, even in 8 years of a Sanders administration, unless the makeup of Congress and the Supreme Court is completely overhauled in incredibly dramatic ways, that, you know, any sort of Medicare for all has a chance in hell of getting through Congress or anything close to it. I mean, hell, these people are working day and night to repeal Obamacare, never mind going to, you know, universal socialized medicine. And of course, that feeds into Bernie's argument that, well, vote for me and we're going to have this huge congressional overhaul, you know, and it's going to be this wave election and we're just going to take over the House and the Senate and it'll be me and I'll appoint all these liberal Supreme Court justices. I'm a little more realistic about that. You know, it's not going to happen. It's more symbolism in this idea than, you know, think you're going to elect Sanders. He's going to take the Oval Office in January, and by March, everybody's going to have Medicare for all. That's ridiculous. It's not going to happen. In the best case scenario, you lay the groundwork for it and you work on it something maybe in 10 or 20 years. You know, there's no way it's going to happen in the first or even second term. That's my opinion. And send me the hate mail. Say I'm wrong. Say I'm in the bag for Hillary. I'm not. I'm a Bernie supporter. Say whatever you want to say. She's right. She's right, except for saying him wanting to do this puts Obamacare in danger. There's nothing to suggest that happens. You can swing and miss or not get as far as you want on trying to get a single-payer Medicare for all system and still have ACA there to work and improve on. The two don't have to be mutually exclusive. She sort of just has made that up whole cloth and keeps repeating it. and Bernie keeps shooting it down. But I think she does have a good overall point of, you know, some of these things that are being proposed, they're just not terribly realistic. I have realistic ideas to move things forward incrementally, which is what her husband did and what Obama did. So I think she's going to have to find a middle ground to craft that message that also gets through to the younger people who just – they're excited because they want to hear what Bernie has to say about these things. And you could say they're naive, or you could say, no, they get it, but they love the spirit, and we need that aggressive revolutionary spirit. Even if we can't get all these things, that's the attitude we need to get in the White House and to get the young voters out, and that'll work down ballot, and it'll get us Congress back, and it'll get us governorships, and it'll get us, you know, state houses back. And he might be right about that. I sure hope he is. I mean, that's the whole point of what me and Rachel and Dana and everybody else are trying to do here with our activism, is to get young people involved. And if Bernie Sanders is the key to that, then great. I'm not 100% convinced of that, though. But we'll see. We'll see. But moving on as far as the debate goes, Hillary was really well prepared, and so was Bernie. I think that especially the first half of the debate, and things got a little nasty and contentious for a hot second, and I think they both kind of collected themselves and didn't go off the rails. But they, you know, they were really – it was a really good back and forth. It was a really illuminating debate. It was very spirited, and the moderators did a good job of just sort of staying out of the way. I think Chuck Todd more than Rachel was trying to interrupt a little bit. But nothing like the Fox people or or the CNN people who, you know, the debate's kind of about them, the moderators, as much as the candidates. And these guys were like, okay, well, if we don't get to all our questions, whatever, if we can get a good substantive back and forth, we're just going to let them go. And that's exactly what they did. And I think you had one period where it was like a half hour or 20 minutes. The moderators didn't say a thing. It was just like a really good back and forth. And I don't remember specifically it was about Wall Street reform or healthcare or something, but you know, they were just going back and forth with some great points, and it was, hey, it's a debate. It's not, you know, a snipey shit show, and it's not a fight with the moderators, it's not a fight with the media. It's a debate. Hey, this is what we pay to see. And I hope that maybe resonates to some of the larger population who's been watching who watched this debate and has been watching the Republican debates and, you know, just sort of the sniping, and now I'm going to fight with the moderator, and we're going to fight over the structure, and we're going to fight because I didn't get enough time. Of course, that lends itself to the fact that there were only two people on stage, and there weren't eight or seven, and, you know, there's nobody to yell about not getting equal time because it's just two people going back and forth and, you know, equal questioning. So that's just a product of this is what a debate is supposed to look like, not, you know, seven people trying to yell over each other and get the buzz line of the night. So, but now I'm actually – these GOP debates have just been horribly pedantic and depressing and redundant. But now this one Saturday, it's got to be interesting, doesn't it? Fox is doing it again, so the moderators, I guess, will try to, instead of being like the MSNBC moderators, they'll try to be like the chaperones with the 6-inch rule at the school dance and just be all up in it and not really let the candidates go back and forth, which is unfortunate. But there's going to be fireworks, right? Because you got Trump yelling about fraud, and he's going to sue, and the Cruz campaign committed fraud and stole Iowa from him. He's not going to let that go. And Cruz obviously has to keep going after Trump. And Trump is going to hop, I guess, back on the Canadian thing. I don't know if New Hampshire, even New Hampshire Republicans, really give a crap about that. Rubio's going to go after both of them. Mostly Cruz, I would think Rubio's going to go after. I don't think he's going to try to get Trump voters. So I think he's really, really going to go after Cruz on his immigration flip-flopping, although Rubio's got plenty of that himself. And then Chris, you got to love Chris Christie. Chris Christie is giving these press conferences and events where he says, this is all about me and Rubio. That's what anybody cares about. That's what's here to see. This debate and this election, this primary here in New Hampshire, it's about me and Rubio. says Chris Christie, who's polling at like 3%, or I guess a little more than that in New Hampshire, but certainly not nearly as much as the top three or four. I don't know if the media is buying it. Rubio so far isn't taking the bait, which is smart, because why would you? That would take his eyes off the person he really has to spar with, who's Cruz. Rubio's not taking the bait so far. And Christie keeps calling him the boy in the bubble, and I keep thinking of that movie with John Travolta from the 70s. Just imagining that's Marco Rubio, and it's kind of funny. So kudos for that, Chris Christie. But yeah, if you believe Chris Christie, it's all about Cruz or Rubio v. Christie. I think this is Christie's swan song. I don't think he's going to do particularly well. I don't think he's particularly well liked. He's more well liked, I guess, in New Hampshire than other parts. But I am guessing he's going to clock in at 5% or less again, and be a distant fifth or sixth at best. And I think that'll be it. And then he'll worry about his own Bridgegate problems, I think. I mean, I don't know. This is Bush's last hurrah and last chance. He's got enough money, you know, to go pretty much further. But if he doesn't really jump up and have a strong showing here, at least a strong fourth, maybe. But that seems unlikely in itself. I don't see how he – I mean, he's already hemorrhaging his donors to Rubio and whoever else. So, sorry. It's hard for me to imagine that Bush finds any real rationale to keep going if he gets skunked here again. And, you know, if he puts in another 3 or 4%. Or I think he finished in Iowa with like 2%, I think. Maybe 3. I mean, what friggin' difference does it make? So I think this could be it for Jebster. Kasich has been showing some good polling. It depends on which poll you look at. Some polls he's like showing 10 to 14%. Other ones he's still 6 or 7%. Kasich, I don't know. Maybe there's a Kasich flourish. See, that's the problem. And this is Trump needs to hope that all these people stay in the race as long as possible. I don't think he realizes that. But when you take all these other – when you take Bush and Christie and – Kasich and Carson and Fiorina out of the mix, and it's just Trump versus Rubio and Cruz, or just Trump versus either one of those head to head, he's losing. He's losing. I don't know if he realizes that. I don't know if there's anything he can do about it, because these people aren't going to stay in the race forever. I mean, I understood why Huckabee and Santorum, who were drawing flies, at least hung in until Iowa, because it's Iowa. You never know. The evangelicals might remember how much they liked you in 2012 and show up, but they were like, no, we've seen this song and dance before. We're going to go with somebody new and fresh. So they weren't interested in Huckabee or Santorum this time around, and they both dropped out, which makes sense. Carson is still somehow getting 10% in spite of himself. I don't know how well he's doing in New Hampshire, but last I checked, he's doing better than like Bush and Christie. So I don't know if he's going to keep going. I it's always hard to figure what's going on with Ben Carson. Is this a book tour? Is he really running for president? Is this some sort of weird like James Franco performance art he's doing? Like, can I be the weirdest, most incoherent, enigmatic presidential candidate ever, and let's see how long it can actually last, and you know, then it's going to be like an indie film that's going to pop up, like, you know, in Alamo Drafthouse. I seriously don't understand what Ben Carson's doing or why people are still voting for him. I have no idea, but people still are, kind of, apparently. And let's see, as soon as the primaries start, if he sends another text, you know, tweet out that, you know, he's gonna go to Belgium for some exotic cheesy likes, or I don't know what he's thinking and what he's gonna do next, and I don't think Ben Carson knows what he's gonna do next, and but he's still there. He's still there, I guess. Good luck. Anyway, I'm gonna take a quick break here and just grab some water and whatnot, and be right back.
You're running.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. Travis flying solo tonight. Let me get back to the debate for a hot second. I kind of got sidetracked. But, yeah, so then we went to foreign policy. And this is where Hillary obviously has an advantage, and she had a huge one tonight. You know, Bernie, that's not a strong suit. He doesn't really have the best grasp or knowledge base, and he kind of sounds like he's winging it. And Hillary, it was Secretary of State, so she knows exactly what she's talking about. Even if you don't necessarily like or support, or you think she's too hawkish, or you think, you know, she's got some neocon in her, which she kind of does. I'm not going to call her a neocon, but she's got some neocon in her. I mean, you know, she voted for the Iraq War resolution with Bernie. We'll never let her forget. Never let us forget, and nor should he. That's a very valid point when you're talking about, you know, trying to separate the candidates here. So he's still hammering away on that, and it's a good point. And, you know, Hillary decided to help topple Gaddafi, and that created a power vacuum that's now turned into a shit show. And, yes, Gaddafi's a bad guy. Saddam was a bad guy. You know, I mean, we know how this song and dance ends, and, you know, we're going to probably find out the hard way with Assad at some point. Now, Assad is truly horrible. Is he more horrible than Gaddafi and Hussein? Maybe, but, you know, on the scale of horrible, awful, brutal dictators, when you create a power vacuum where you have just tons of extremists and well-armed militants and crazy religious fundamentalist psychopaths, you create a power vacuum by overthrowing a dictator, and then you can have worse people running around running the show. And we never seem to learn that in American foreign policy. We're under this delusion that we're gonna storm in, the Marines are gonna take over, everybody's gonna greet us with candy and flowers, and we're gonna have Jefferson's style democracy and McDonald's and Starbucks pop up everywhere. You know. And American Idol Kabul or whatever we think is going to happen every time we do this. And guess what? It never quite works out that way. And Hillary's got a little bit of that in her. She's got a little bit. No, I don't think she's, you know, I'm not going to call her a Wolfowitz or, you know, anything like that. But she's got a little bit. But she knows her shit. That's the point. Even if you don't agree with her policies and you think she's too hawkish or neoconish, you hear her talk and you hear Bernie talk, and look, it's like, okay, one of them knows what she's doing. The other one better assemble a really awesome foreign policy team around him because he doesn't quite grasp this as well as she does. And I'm saying this as a Bernie supporter. Yeah, send your hate mail. I know things are getting heated. You can't say anything bad about Bernie, or you're in the bag for Hillary and you're a horrible establishment hack. Okay, I guess I am. But, you know, if you want to call me that, fine. But it's obvious. You listen to them talk about foreign policy. One of them is on top of their game. One of them not so much. Not that all his ideas are terrible, but a lot of them are, expand on that a little bit. I'm not quite sure where you're going with that. And, you know, he doesn't do the best job of that. That's not to say a President Sanders would be a disaster on foreign policy. Like I said, he can surround himself with an excellent foreign policy team. And he's smart enough to judge, you know, his own personal judgment and the people close to him against the people at the Pentagon who want to go to war with everybody at all times and spend all the money on defense. And, you know, I'm sure he would be able to muddle through it and would be all right. But, you know, because compared to Hillary, who really is on top of this and knows her stuff, even if you don't agree with all her positions, it's kind of no contest at this point. I hate to say it. The problem for Hillary is when you run down the list of what voters care about on the Democratic side, you know, foreign policy and terrorism, it's there, but it's down the list. And I don't think she's running up huge enough margins for an issue that's way down the list that it's going to help her a ton. The pundits think so, but the pundits, you know, they kind of think what their opinion is in the heat of the moment is what is going to happen and what people care about, which leads me to what didn't get brought up tonight, and which is very, very frustrating. Just Rachel would be here to tell you all about it if she could. You know, we got this full-fledged, full-frontal assault on reproductive rights in this country. It's going on every day. We got, you know, just the other day, this bogus Planned Parenthood investigation blew up in the faces of the creators of this video in Texas. They got arrested, not Planned Parenthood, you know. And it was brought up for a hot second at the Republican debate and then glossed over real quick because it's horribly embarrassing. And it's not even brought up tonight. And that's amazing to me. It's amazing. I mean, granted, yeah, at the end, Chuck Todd and Rachel Maddow said, well, we didn't get into all our questions. But it's like that should be higher up on the list than you guys think it is. Clearly, the punditry, even on the liberal side, has dropped the ball on this. They're not talking about this. They've forgotten. And this is a big effing deal, you know, and it's amazing. I saw an article today about how young women are, you know, they should be supporting Hillary. They're not. They're for Bernie. But I can tell you, whoever they're supporting, they care about this and they want to hear about this and they want to know where these candidates stand. And none of these moderators on either side are touching it. They're not. And I don't get it. And gay rights, for that matter. I mean, Hillary did bring it up in her opening and closing arguments, just say, hey, you know, LGBT rights, it's a thing, and sexism, it's a thing, but, you know, none of the moderators asked them a question about it, and they didn't last debate, and they didn't end the debate before that, and when the hell are we finally going to get to it? I mean, I know that the hot-button issue now is you said this and they said that, and ISIS is going to come kill us all one day, but in the real world, reproductive rights are under assault. And, you know, you got crazy people down in Colorado Springs shooting up Planned Parenthoods. And you got our group here first trying to recall now just to make sure they're not getting elected. State elected representatives here in Colorado that sympathize with terrorists who shoot up Planned Parenthood. And we're raising money and taking time out of our day to, you know, show up at the state capitol and say, hey, this is a big problem. We got to do something about this. And these friggin' moderators, it's completely off the radar for them. Even Rachel Maddow, who's been huge on this stuff in the past, she scarcely talks about it on her show, and she hasn't talked about it at all with these candidates. Are they saving it? I don't know. Maybe they're like, oh, well, you know, it's still early, and everybody just wants to hear about ISIS and healthcare, and we'll get to it eventually, but a lot of people, including me, and I'm a dude, I want to hear about it now. So if anybody's got an explanation of why nobody wants to talk about this, I don't know. And I'm hoping one of these candidates, I'm assuming it's going to be Hillary at some point, just kind of says, hey, you know what? Let's talk about this. You know, I know that's not really what you're supposed to do in a debate, and I know she's got all her talking points ready for the questions she's going to get, but at a certain point, I really hope she or Bernie, you know, by all means, Bernie, go ahead. You know, one of them just stops, hey, let's stop the show for a second. Let's talk about reproductive rights here, because this is a big effing deal. And you better believe it's a big effing deal if, God forbid, there's a Republican president who's going to stack the Supreme Court with justices who are going to overturn Roe v. Wade. If not federally, then de facto by allowing all these Republican-controlled state houses that are de facto outlawing abortion to have their way with, hospital privileges for doctors at abortion clinics, which is a bullshit backhanded way under the bullshit guise of protecting women's health, to just shutting these clinics down, to defunding Planned Parenthood. I mean, this stuff is happening and nobody's talking about it. And I'm done ranting about it because now I'm just repeating myself. But, you know, please tell me I'm not alone in this, that I'm not the only one that notices this is just not being brought up. And it needs to be brought up. And it needs to be talked about, and a light needs to be shown on it, because these young people getting involved in the process, a lot of them don't really realize this is happening, especially if they live in a place like New Hampshire, even though there's some crap, I'm sure, in New Hampshire too. But, you know, what about Texas and Oklahoma and Mississippi? You know, even here in Colorado, this is something that needs to be talked about and it needs to be addressed. And I hope eventually it does. That's all I have to say. Anyway, though, Yeah, so foreign policy, I think Hillary really cleaned up on that, but it's just not that big a deal to Democratic voters. It isn't. It's economic concerns and criminal justice reform, and that got kind of short shrift tonight. I mean, they touched on it a little bit, but not really. I think we spent way too much time over this. Well, he says you're a progressive, and what does a progressive mean? And, you know, Hillary kind of tried to shut it down, and that was that. The emails came up, and I'm not going to get too much of the emails. We talked about it. It's, again, people on both sides are going to keep hammering it. They're going to say it's a big problem. I have my libertarian friend that thinks Hillary's going to get hauled away in cuffs any day now. It's a nothing burger. Nothing's going to come of it. Nothing. Nothing. It is going to spurn, I think, it already has, but I think it's going to spurn some very strict laws going forward for anybody in a position to have any information that might even one day be deemed classified, that, you know, none of this private server bullshit, and there's going to be these new protocols, but they're not going to retroactively do that and turn around and put the cuffs on Hillary. I'm sorry, you know, Raul, it's not going to happen. But it, you know, it's still a story, and it plays into the narrative of Hillary's unlikability. And Hillary kind of said, no, I'm not worried about it. It's big nothing burger. And, you know, I think she's right. But could be wrong. We'll see. You know, if she winds up getting arrested for it, I guess they're going to have to arrest Colin Powell, too, and Condi Rice, because they did the same friggin' thing. Emails they had on their private servers have been retroactively deemed classified. So I guess slap the cuffs on them, too. Well, they're not running for president, so. So I'm not even going to bother too much about that. What else? See, this is why it kind of sucks when it's just me, because Rachel likes to take copious notes, like, you know, full notebooks, steno books full of notes, and then talk on all the individual topics. I like to give my color commentary and just jump in and then sort of give an overall impression feeling. So I'm sorry, you know, if I couldn't go point by point on everything that was discussed in the debate. But how do I think this is going to play out? Not a big change. I mean, Hillary was strong, so was Bernie. I think Bernie lost some steam in the second half of the debate. I'm not going to play an age issue here or anything. I just think that, you know, Hillary just kind of kept pressing forward, and Bernie was also really, you know, very strong and hammering back in the first half of the debate. In the second debate, I don't want to say he was off his game, but, you know, I don't know if it was as strong for him. I don't think his supporters give a crap. Undecideds out there, a little nudge for Hillary. Maybe, you know, is the race going to tighten? I think it will naturally, just because, you know, Hillary's going to spend a lot of time there. She's going to drum up a lot of her former supporters, or maybe we're getting a little skittish. Ooh, this was close in Iowa. I don't know. But now she's going to be on the ground, shaking hands, giving her speeches. And I think she'll shore up some support there. And I think it'll be close. But I think Bernie's going to win pretty handily. And then the question's going to be, okay, so Bernie, he just barely narrowly lost Iowa, but he won big in New Hampshire. Is this phenomenon for real? And then we get into South Carolina and Nevada and Super Tuesday, and do enough people feel the burn and sense this momentum enough where they said, okay, this guy is a legit guy too. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Because, you know, Bernie keeps sort of rising up the charts, and I think he can make up a lot of ground really quickly, and I think he can flip the script if enough people sort of reach out, or if Clinton implodes. But she's not imploding, you know. She's not going to do that. If for some reason the FBI does swoop in and slap cuffs on her, which I don't think is going to happen in a million years, yeah, obviously that changes the paradigm dramatically. Or if she has a huge gaffe or something. But, you know, right now, you know, does this momentum play into people in these states where right now Hillary still got these big leads, you know, in the South and so forth? Does this play enough into them where they start thinking, okay, you know, maybe we can roll with the Sanders guy. He can win. He is for real. That's what it's going to depend on. I think Bernie will win handily this coming Tuesday. Anywhere from 10 to 15 points is my guess. if it's 20 or more, I think that definitely helps his momentum. But, you know, it's interesting. I thought, well, is Clinton just kind of give a little bit of lip service to New Hampshire and she'll take the big loss and she'll just shore up, you know, the South where she's already leading and just spend some time in South Carolina or really focus there? And the answer is no. No, no. She wants to close the gap here in New Hampshire and try to flip the script. And now as where Bernie was the underdog and him basically tying it or having a very narrow loss was the story there, I think she's trying to flip the script to where and she keeps saying this, of course, hey, you know, Bernie's got a big lead here. He's, you know, they're neighborly. He's Vermont's right next door. And she's trying to play the underdog. And so if she finishes closer than expected, then that's a boost for her. So we'll see. We'll see if that strategy pays off. That's definitely what I think she's doing. She's trying to play the underdog role and saying, hey, no, I'm fighting here in New Hampshire, and look what I did. They thought I was going to lose by 20. I only lost by 10. And that could be a story in itself. It certainly could be. If she does all that and Bernie still wins by 25, then she's got a problem. But, you know, we'll see what happens. New Hampshire's goofy, too. Let's roll back to 2008 real quick, right? Obama won in Iowa. Again, somewhat of a surprise because you can't poll friggin' Iowa caucuses. But New Hampshire primary is tough to poll, too, because Obama got a lot of momentum from that. And then the average of polls leading up to primary night in New Hampshire had Obama up by, I think, 6 to 8 points. And then Hillary actually won by, I think, 8 points or so. So like a 15, 16-point swing, man, that's big. And if it's a 16-point swing again and you got Bernie leading by 16 or so or 20 or however much, then there's something to watch on Tuesday night. I don't know. I don't know what led to that. But if Hillary – her and her people have to be thinking, if we overperform the polls by 15 or 16 points in 2008, who's to say we can't do it now? And, like, there's similarities, right? The upstart guy who's trying to usurp her power or whatever or not make her the inevitable one, and then, oh, hey, guess what? Of course, after that, it all fell apart for her. So, you know, maybe that's not a history she necessarily wants to repeat beat for beat. But, you know, at that point, he was already showing some leads in polls in these other states where she is this time. So it doesn't exactly translate. But, yeah, there's recent historical precedents for the Clinton campaign to think they can do better than what the polls are showing now. Is that going to happen? Who knows? I have no idea. I do think Bernie's going to win by a comfortable margin, but if that comfortable margin is less than what the polls are showing and what a lot of the Bernie supporters, and I'm warning you guys, every, you know, there's been a poll, some polls that have come out and say, oh, Bernie's leading by 25, 30. If you're going to tout that and retweet it and shove it in everybody's face, it better damn well happen. Because if you guys do that, and then he only wins by 10, you know, then the narrative is, well, look, she came back and her support is actually stronger and that gives her momentum. And I understand if you're young and you're new to this process and you're not as cynical as I am and you don't kind of you haven't understood the whole interwoven media narrative and punditry and polls and how this all weaves together. There's danger. Think about Trump. Think about what Trump did in Iowa. Oh, look at the polls. I'm leading. The polls. I'm a winner. So he created – and then in the very last days, yeah, his campaign was tamping down expectations, but not him. Not him. And so you do that and you set yourself up to have the narrative flipped on you and have it work to a disadvantage. So again, I'm telling you, you Bernie supporters out there, if you get excited about a poll that comes out and shows Bernie leading by 25 or 30, great. Be excited about it. Be careful about retweeting it all over creation and writing a coast blog about it and, you know, shoving it in everybody's face. Because if it doesn't turn out that way, then you're helping to create a narrative that benefits Clinton and hurts Bernie. I know that probably doesn't make sense to you, but trust me on this. Trust me, and or I guess don't trust me and see what happens. You know, momentum and perception and the way a story is framed matters. If you don't believe me, just look at the Republican side in Iowa. Rubio came in third, and as far as the punditry concerns, he's the big winner. Trump came in second, and it was a crushing loss for him. Cruz is kind of his own thing. Yeah, he came in first, but most people don't think it's sustainable outside of places like Iowa. They're probably right, but we'll see. I don't think he's going to do particularly well in New Hampshire. And in the South, it kind of depends. It kind of depends if people are feeling more outsider-y or more most likely guy to win slash establishment-y, and that can jump a number of ways. I think Cruz will probably do well in South Carolina. I mean, didn't Gingrich win? I mean, he's from there, but so, you know, we'll see. But that's kind of it for now. Just wanted to give a couple updates. The committee was going to meet tonight. We're going to meet probably in the next few days instead, and our next Remove Winholtz rally, which is going to be a big one, is going to happen sometime late February, maybe early March. We're going to sort all that out in the next couple days. We're going to be back. We have some catching up to do. We realize we're going to talk. We may do one tomorrow if Rachel's feeling better. Just some reflections on this debate. I'm sure she's has some more interesting insights than I had, which is just very general. Saturday night, we will watch, if and not in real time, we'll watch that Republican debate because there's going to be fireworks. We got a Super Bowl party Sunday. You guys are all invited. You know, I'm just kidding. I mean, if you live in Denver, I suppose it's possible, but I'm not expecting you to fly to Denver to meet us for a Super Bowl party. Rachel and Dana don't even like football, so I'll probably spend a lot of time, if they're watching the game with me, I'll probably be, like, explaining a lot of what's happening, but that's fine. And yeah, that's about it for now. So I've been Travis. Oh yeah, sorry, there's nobody else here. I was waiting for them to say their names, but it's just me. So as usual, stay active, stay tuned, and stay involved, and we'll talk to you again soon. Say how high.